Talking today with Shannon Farrell, Dr. Shannon Farrell from Oklahoma State University's Division of Agriculture. And Shannon, you and Dr. Larry Sanders have been involved in looking at and studying and looking at what really State Question 777, the so-called right to farm constitutional amendment that's being proposed that folks will be voting on in November. You've looked at what it says, the actual language. You've looked at what, you know, kind of what some of those elements of it are and what it might do if indeed it was passed.
Yeah, and one thing we like to distinguish for folks is that we have a right to farm statute that deals with nuisance lawsuits for farms. This is a constitutional amendment, and it would go beyond just nuisance claims. What State Question 777 would do is create a constitutional amendment. So we're adding language to the Oklahoma State Constitution that would basically prohibit the legislature from enacting any sort of statute, and then kind of by extension that means that state agencies would also be limited in what they could do, that would abridge the right of farmers and ranchers to make use of, you know, livestock production practices and agricultural technologies.
Now, As you look at the language, and there's been a lot of discussion about the language, one thing that kind of sticks out that is not in the other two existing constitutional amendments in other states, North Dakota and Missouri, is a little phrase called regarding without a compelling state interest. And now that's drawn a lot of attention.
Yeah, and I hate to make people go to law school to explain what compelling state interest means. So in a really short explanation, if we are looking at a fundamental constitutional right, for example, like the right to vote, things like family rights, marital rights, due process rights, things that are fairly, you know, basic constitutional rights, a legislative body can't pass a statute or other form of law that would interfere with that fundamental right unless the legislature can show we're doing this to support a compelling state interest, quote unquote. So it's kind of hard to define specifically what's a compelling state interest, but it's regarded as being a constitutional right of the highest order. So in other words, once you've recognized something as a right, you can't pass a statute that would interfere with that right unless you can demonstrate there's a really, really strong reason why we're supporting this. Lots of times an example of that is public safety. You know, we recognize that if we pass this law that it may interfere with some people's rights, but we're doing that to protect a greater public good, for example, public safety. Mm-hmm. And so that's the significance of that compelling state interest phrase.
That sounds like it would be a legal challenge, or there have to be some sort of a legal decision made through the courts if indeed that happened.
Yeah, and any time that you've got that recognition of a fundamental right and the legislature wants to pass a rule regarding that right, whatever it might be, then number one, the legislature would have to show, if it's contested in court, they would have to show, number one, that there was a compelling state interest. We're doing this for a very important reason. And number two, and this is the one that often gets overlooked, is that the legislature would also basically have to show that what we did was the way to protect that really important state interest, and this was the least interference we could cause with that recognized right. So it's kind of a two-tiered test that the state basically bears if that rule's contested.
So it would be state of Oklahoma that would be basically, defending that state law that the legislature might pass.
Yeah, for example, hypothetically, let's say we pass State Question 777, constitutional amendment goes into place. Legislature passes some rule that a producer believes interferes with their right to make use of those agricultural practices. So in the ensuing case, the state would have the burden of proving, hey, we did this for a very important reason, and number two, we did this in the way that caused the least interference we could conceive of with that right.
A lot of the discussion regarding 777 talks about various ways that agriculture might do this or that regarding the environment, regarding various practices and whatnot. And it says within the constitutional amendment that people will be voting on that any statute that's enacted before, I think, the end of, 2014, is basically grandfathered in. You can't go back and say that 777 would apply to it. Mm-hmm. Has that happened in other cases before? Is this kind of a unique situation for a constitutional amendment?
I think with that particular language being added to the amendment, I think that was kind of a recognition that we've worked hard to build a body of laws in the state that regulate agriculture. And I think that may have been a statement to the legislature that you know, we feel good with the system that we have in place now, so we don't want to go back and unwrite things. And I think that's probably a good idea simply because you'd really be kind of tearing into the fabric of all the precedent that we have up until this point. So they wanted to make sure that the amendment would be acting, looking forward, not looking backward.
If indeed the people vote in favor of 777, I know that you and Dr. Sanders have kind of looked at some of the possible things, how things might play out and how much impact this might actually have.
Mm-hmm. You know, and it's really difficult to say. Historically, if you're looking at legal research, you want to look at other jurisdictions that have had a law similar to yours and see what happens there. And we really don't have much of a background for that. North Dakota passed a constitutional amendment similar to this in, I believe, 2012. And then Missouri passed a similar amendment, I believe, in 2014. And there really haven't been any reported cases from those amendments. So we don't really have a good feel for how other state Supreme Courts have looked at that sort of language. Anytime you pass a constitutional amendment, you always wonder, what are the potential unintended consequences? And it may be that we see the same thing that's happened so far in North Dakota and Missouri, that there really isn't a lot of activity, that maybe it did what it meant to do in preventing some of that litigation activity. But it may also be that the exceptions in the amendment language make it so that there's really not a lot of new litigation. And the reason I'm saying that is because the amendment says that, for example, the constitutional amendment doesn't affect anything that was on the books prior to 2014, but it also doesn't affect anything regarding a trespass, eminent domain, condemnation, and that's where a lot of those controversies in the ag sector arise from. But there may be some other consequences out there that we just don't foresee. For example, we don't know how federal courts would look at that language. And of course, at the state level, we're not isolated from federal impacts. We have to implement a lot of federal programs at the state level. And so there may be some questions about how does the enactment of that language affect how you go about implementing federal rules, if those federal rules might not comply with the language that you see in the state question 777 amendment.
But really, it's still at the end of the day, does 777 have any sort of real impact on the federal rules from, say, an EPA or the any of the other federal agencies out there regarding the environment, this type of thing? Seems like that would have traditionally, that's always had precedent over any sort of state rule or regulation.
So that's a very good point to raise. So this would be a change to our state constitution, which really doesn't impact anything at the federal level. So a question would be, here's an example. At the state level, the Department of Ag, Food, and Forestry and the Department of Environmental Quality respectively have responsibility for implementing some federal environmental rules mm-hmm. at the state level. Sure. They have that authority because we have a delegation agreement with those federal agencies, EPA, for example, that says we'll enforce your rules at the state level and we'll make sure that our state rules are always at least as restrictive as the federal rules are. So then the question becomes, after, let's say hypothetically, we do pass the state question. Let's say that the federal government enacts some rules that would be more restrictive on agriculture than our current state rules. So then the question becomes, would our state agencies be able to maintain delegation because they wouldn't be able to enact more restrictive state rules? Mm-hmm. Would that affect their delegation status? Or would that have to be appealed to the state Supreme Court to say, well, is that a compelling state interest for us to have that delegation authority? There are lots of ways that could play out, and we just don't have a good laboratory to see elsewhere, has that happened somewhere else? So that's one of the questions that we'd have to answer somewhere down the road. And it may not be in a state court either. It might be an issue that goes to a federal court. And in a federal court, of course, a state law is going to be subordinate to federal statutes, federal constitutional law. Mm-hmm. And so we'd take a back seat to that.
Right. And it could impact the ability of our state agencies to be able to do some of the federal regs that they are being told by a federal government agency. This is the new rule in place federally. This is the mandate you have to carry out. I guess what the feds might have to do it instead of our state agencies?
Well, that's one possibility is that, you might see that a rule is passed, and if it's appealed, the court might say, well, that's consistent with the amendment. It's not an issue. Or they could say, no, it's not consistent with the amendment. the legislature can't respond to that. So that's something that the federal government would have to do. So in that case, it may be something that the federal government deals with on a case-by-case basis. It might be something that affects how that authority is delegated to state agencies.
Some unknowns there, obviously,
yeah.
At the end of the day. Anything else out there that really, you know, popped, you know, kind of surfaced as you looked at the consequences?
That's a good question. We've been trying to figure out and use some sound theory, you know, to kind of extrapolate that. But really, this is kind of new territory. We've got right to farm statutes dealing with the nuisance issues in pretty much all 50 states, but very few of the amendments. Like I said, only two really that look much like Oklahoma states. So there's a lot of unknowns that we're just trying to figure out.